stop in the name of the law.
What the law's name, then?
How should I know?
Why are we chasing him?
Because he's running away.
Cuddy had only been a guard for a few days, but already he had absorbed one important and basic fact. It is almost impossible for anyone to be in a street without breaking the law. There are a whole quiverful of offences available to a policeman who wishes to pass the time of day with a citizen, ranging from loitering with intent through obstruction to lingering while being the wrong colour, shape, sex, species. It occurred briefly to him that anyone not making a dash for it, when they saw detritus knuckling along at high speed behind them, was probably guilty of contravening the Being Bloody Stupid Act of 1581. But it was too late to take that into account. Someone was running and they were chasing. They were chasing because he was running, and he was running because they were chasing. Vimes sat down with his coffee and looked at the thing he'd picked up from the rooftop. It looked like a short set of Pan pipes, provided Pan was restricted to 6 notes, and all of them the same. They were made of steel welded together. There was a strip of serrated metal along one side, like a flattened-out cogwheel, and the whole thing reeked of fireworks. He laid it carefully beside his plate. He read Sergeant Colon's report. Fred Colon had spent some time on it, probably with a dictionary. It went as follows. Report of Sergeant F. Colon. Approx. 10 a.m. today, August 15th, I proceeded in the company of Corporal, C.W. St. John J. Nobbs, to the Guild of Fools and Joculators in God Street, whereupon we conversed with Clown Boffo, who said, Clown Bino, the corpus derelicti, was definitely seen by him, Clown Boffo, leaving the guild the previous morning just after the explosion, full stop. Brackets, this is dead bent, in my opinion, the reason being, the stiff was dead at least 2 days, Corporal C.W. St. John J. Nobbs agrees, so someone is telling meat pies, never trust anyone who falls on his arse for a living, full stop, close brackets. Whereupon Dr. Whiteface met us, and, damn near gave us the derriere velocité out of the place. It seemed to us, me and Corporal C.W. St. John J. Nobbs, that the fools are worried that it might have been the assassins, but we don't know why, full stop. Also, Clown Boffo went on about us looking for Bino's nose, but he had a nose on when we saw him here, so we said to Clown Boffo, did he mean a false nose, he said, no, a real one, bugger off, full stop. Whereupon, we come back here, full stop. Vimes worked out what derriere velocité meant. The whole nose business looked like a conundrum wrapped up in an enigma, or at least in Sergeant Colon's handwriting, which was pretty much the same thing. Why be asked to look for a nose that wasn't lost? He looked at Cuddy's report, written in the careful, angular handwriting of someone more used to runes and sagas. Captain Vimes, this herewith is the chronicle of me, Lance Constable Cuddy. Bright was the morning, and high our hearts when we proceeded to the Alchemist's Guild, where events eventuated as I shall now sing. These included exploding balls. As to the quest upon which we were sent, we were informed that the attached piece of paper, brackets attached, is in the handwriting of Leonard of Quirm, who vanished in mysterious circumstances. It is how to make a powder called number one powder, which is used in fireworks. Mr. Silverfish, the alchemist, says any alchemist knows it. Also, in the margin of the paper is a drawing of the gonne, because I asked my cousin Grabpot about Leonard, and he used to sell paints to Leonard, and he recognized the writing, and said Leonard always wrote backwards, because he was a genius. I have copied same herewith. Vimes laid the papers down and put the pieces of metal on top of them. Then he reached in his pocket and produced a couple of metal pellets. A stick, the gargoyle had said. Vimes looked at the sketch. It looked, as Cuddy had noted, like the stock of a crossbow with a pipe on the top of it. There were a few sketches of strange mechanical devices alongside it, and a couple of the little six-pipe things. The whole drawing looked like a doodle. Someone, possibly this Leonard, had been reading a book about fireworks and had scribbled in the margins. Fireworks. Well, fireworks. But fireworks weren't a weapon. Crackers went bang, rockets went up, more or less, but all you could be sure of them hitting was the sky. Hammerhock was noted for his skill with mechanisms. That wasn't a major dwarfish attribute. People thought it was, but it wasn't. They were skilled with metal, all right, and they made good swords and jewellery, but they weren't too technical when it came to things like cogwheels and springs. Hammerhock was unusual. So, supposing there was a weapon. Supposing there was something about it that was different, strange, terrifying. No, that couldn't be it. It'd either end up all over the place, or it'd be destroyed. It wouldn't end up in the Assassin's Museum. What got put in museums? Things that hadn't worked, or had got lost, or ought to be remembered. So where's the sense in putting our firework on show? There had been lots of locks on the door, so not a museum you just wandered into then. Maybe you had to be a high-up assassin, and one day one of the guild leaders would take you down there at dead of night and say... For some reason, the face of the patrician loomed up at this point. Once again, Vimes felt the edge of something, some fundamental, central thing. Where'd he go? Where'd he go? There was a maze of alleys around the doors. Cuddy leaned against a wall and fought for breath.
There he go, shouted Detritus, along Whalebone Lane.
He lumbered off in pursuit. Vimes put down his coffee cup. Whoever had shot those lead balls at him had been very accurate across several hundred yards, and had got off 6 shots faster than anyone could fire an arrow. Vimes picked up the pipes. 6 little pipes, 6 shots. And you could carry a pocketful of these things. You could shoot further, faster, more accurately than anyone else with any other kind of weapon. So, a new type of weapon, much, much faster than a bow. The assassins wouldn't like that. They wouldn't like that at all. They weren't even keen on bows. The assassins preferred to kill up close. So they'd put the gun safely under lock and key. The gods alone knew how they'd come by it in the first place, and a few senior assassins would know about it, and they'd pass on the secret. Beware of things like this.
Down there! He went into Grope Alley!
Slow down! Slow down!
Why?
Said Detritus. It's a dead end.
The two watchmen lumbered to a halt. Cuddy knew that he was currently the brains of the partnership, even though Detritus was presently counting, his face beaming with pride, the stones in the wall beside him. Why had they chased someone halfway across the city? Because they'd run away? No one ran away from the watch. Thieves just flashed their licenses. Unlicensed thieves had nothing to fear from the watch since they'd saved up all their fear for the Thieves' Guild. Assassins always obeyed the letter of the law, and honest men didn't run away from the watch. Running away from the watch was downright suspicious. The axiom, honest men have nothing to fear from the police, is currently under review by the Axioms Appeal Board. The origin of Grope Alley's name was fortunately lost in the celebrated mists of time, but it had come to be deserved. It had turned into a kind of tunnel as upper stories were built out and over it, leaving a few inches of sky. Cuddy peered around the corner into the gloom. Click, click. It came from deep in the darkness.
Detritus?
Yeah?
Did he have any weapons?
Just a stick. One stick.
Only I smell fireworks.
Cuddy pulled his head back very carefully. There had been the smell of fireworks in Hammerhock's workshop, and Mr. Hammerhock ended up with a big hole in his chest. And a sense of named dread, which is much more specific and terrifying than nameless dread, was stealing over Cuddy. It was similar to the feeling you get when you're playing a high-stakes game and your opponent suddenly grins and you realise that you don't know all the rules, but you do know you'll be lucky to get out of this with, if you're very fortunate, your shirt. On the other hand, he could picture Sergeant Colon's face. We chased this man into an alley, Sarge, and then we came away. He drew his sword.
Lance Constable Detritus.
Yes, Lance Constable Cuddy.
Follow me.
Why? The damn thing was made of metal, wasn't it? 10 minutes in a hot crucible and that'd be the end of the problem. Something like that, something dangerous, why not just get rid of it? Why keep it? But that wasn't human nature, was it? Sometimes things were too fascinating to destroy. He looked at the strange metal tubes. 6 short pipes welded together, sealed firmly at one end. There was a small hole in the top side of each of the pipes. Vimes slowly picked up one of the lumps of lead. The alley twisted once or twice, but there were no other alleys or doors off it. There was one at the far end. It was larger than a normal door and heavily constructed.
"Where are we?" whispered Cuddy.
"Don't know," said Detritus. "Back of the docks somewhere."
Cuddy pushed open the door with his sword.
"Cuddy?"
"Yeah?"
"We walked 7T9 steps."
"That's nice."
Cold air rushed past them.
"Meat store," whispered Cuddy. "Someone picked the lock."
He slipped through and into a high, gloomy room as large as a temple, which in some ways it resembled. Faint light crept through the high, ice-covered windows. From rack upon rack all the way to the ceiling hung meat carcasses. They were semi-transparent, and so very cold Cuddy's breath turned to crystals in the air.
"Oh, my," said Detritus. "I think this the Pork Futures Warehouse in Moorpork Road."
"What?"
"Used to work here," said the troll. "Used to work everywhere. Go away, you stupid troll, you too thick,"
he added gloomily.
"Is there any way out?"
"The main door is in Moorpork Street, but no one comes in here for months, till pork exists."
Probably no other world in the multiverse has warehouses for things which only exist in potentia. But the Pork Futures Warehouse in Ankh Moorpork is a product of the patricians' rules about baseless metaphors, the literal-mindedness of citizens who assume that everything must exist somewhere, and the general thinness of the fabric of reality around Ankh, which is so thin that it's as thin as a very thin thing. The net result is that trading in pork futures, in pork that doesn't exist yet, led to the building of the warehouse to store it until it does. The extremely low temperatures are caused by the imbalance in the temporal energy flow. At least, that's what the wizards in the high-energy magic building say. And they've got proper pointy hats and letters after their name, so they know what they're talking about. Cuddy shivered.
"You in here," he shouted. "It's the watch. Step out now."
A dark figure appeared from between a couple of pre-pigs.
"Now what do we do?"
said Detritus. The distant figure raised what looked like a stick, holding it like a crossbow, and fired. The first shot zinged off Cuddy's helmet. A stony hand clamped onto the dwarf's head, and Detritus pushed Cuddy behind him. But then the figure was running towards them, still firing. Detritus blinked. 5 more shots, one after the other, punctured his breastplate. And then the running man was through the open door, slamming it behind him.
"Captain Vames?"
He looked up. It was Captain Quirk of the Day Watch with a couple of his men behind him.
"Yes?"
"You come with us and give me your sword."
"What?"
"I think you heard me, Captain."
"Look, it's me, Quirk. Sam Vimes. Don't be a fool."
"I ain't a fool. I've got men with crossbows. Men. It's you that'd be the fool if you resist arrest."
"Oh, I'm under arrest?
Only if you don't come with us."
The patrician was in the oblong office, staring out of the window. The multi-belled cacophony of 5 o'clock was just dying away. Vimes saluted. From the back, Vetinari looked like a carnivorous flamingo.
"Ah, Vimes," he said without looking round. "Come here, will you, and tell me what you see."
Vimes hated guessing games, but he joined the patrician anyway. The oblong office had a view over half the city, although most of it was rooftops and towers. Vimes's imagination peopled the towers with men holding guns. The patrician would be an easy target.
"What do you see out there, Captain?"
"City of Ankh Moorpork, sir," said Vimes, keeping his expression carefully blank.
"And does it put you in mind of anything, Captain?"
Vimes scratched his head. If he was going to play games, he was going to play games.
"Well, sir, when I was a kid, we owned a cow once, and one day it got sick, and it was always my job to clean out the cowshed, and..."
"It reminds me of a clock," said the patrician. "Big wheels, little wheels, all clicking away. The little wheels spin, and the big wheels turn, all at different speeds, you see. But the machine works. And that is the most important thing. The machine keeps going. Because when the machine breaks down..."
He turned suddenly, strode to his desk with his usual predatory stalk, and sat down.
"Or again, sometimes a piece of grit might get into the wheels, throwing them off balance. One speck of grit.
Vetinari looked up and flashed Vimes a mirthless smile. "I won't have that." Vimes stared at the wall.
"I believe I told you to forget about certain recent events, Captain."
"Sir."
"Yet it appears that the Watch have been getting in the wheels."
"Sir."
"What am I to do with you?"
"Good say, sir." Vimes minutely examined the wall. He wished Carrot was here. The lad might be simple, but he was so simple that sometimes he saw things that the subtle missed. And he kept coming up with simple ideas that stuck in your mind. Policeman, for example. He'd said to Vimes one day, while they were proceeding along the street of Small Gods, "Do you know where policeman comes from, sir?" Vimes hadn't. "Polis used to mean city," said Carrot. "That's what policeman means, a man for the city." "Not many people know that. The word polite comes from polis too. It used to mean the proper behaviour for someone living in a city." "Man of the city." Carrot was always throwing out stuff like that. Like copper. Vimes had believed all his life that the Watch were called coppers because they carried copper badges. "But no," said Carrot, "it comes from the old word capere, to capture." Carrot read books in his spare time. Not well. He'd have real difficulty if you cut his index finger off. But continuously. And he wandered around Ankh Morpork on his day off.
"Captain Vimes?"
Vimes blinked.
"Sir?" "You have no concept of the delicate balance of the city. I'll tell you one more time. This business with the assassins and the dwarf and this clown, you are to cease involving yourself."
"No, sir, I can't."
"Give me your badge."
Vimes looked down at his badge. He never really thought about it. It was just something he'd always had. It didn't mean anything very much, really, one way or the other. It was just something he'd always had.
"My badge?" "And your sword?"
Slowly, with fingers that suddenly felt like bananas, and bananas that didn't belong to him at that, Vimes undid his sword belt.
"And your badge?"
Not my badge."
"Why not?"
Because it's my badge."
"But you're resigning anyway when you get married."
"Right." Their eyes met.
"How much does it mean to you?"
Vimes stared. He couldn't find the right words. It was just that he'd always been a man with a badge. He wasn't sure he could be one without the other. Finally, Lord Vetinari said, "Very well, I believe you're getting married at noon tomorrow." His long fingers picked up the gilt-embossed invitation from the desk.
"Yes, you can keep your badge then,
and have an honourable retirement, but I'm keeping the sword, and the day watch will be sent down to the yard shortly to disarm your men. I'm standing the night watch down, Captain Vimes. In due course I might appoint another man in charge, at my leisure. Until then, you and your men can consider yourselves on leave."
"The day watch? A bunch of—"
"I'm sorry?"
"Yes, sir." "One infraction, however, and the badge is mine. Remember."
Cuddy opened his eyes.
"You're alive,"
said Detritus. The dwarf gingerly removed his helmet. There was a gouge in the rim, and his head ached.
"It looks like a mild skin abrasion," said Detritus.
"A what?"
"Oh," Cuddy grimaced.
"What about you, anyway?"
he said. There was something odd about the troll. It hadn't quite dawned on him what it was, but there was definitely something unfamiliar, quite apart from all the holes.
"I suppose the armour was some help," said Detritus.
He pulled at the straps of his breastplate. 5 discs of metal slid out at around belt level.
"If it hadn't slowed them down, they'd be seriously abraded."
"What's up with you? Why are you talking like that?"
"Like what, pray?"
"What happened to the me big troll talk? No offence meant."
"I'm not sure I understand."
Cuddy shivered and stamped his feet to keep warm.
"Let's get out of here."
They trotted to the door. It was shut fast.
"Can you knock it down?"
"No. If this place wasn't troll-proof, it'd be empty. Sorry."
"Detritus?"
"Yes?"
"Are you all right? Only there's steam coming off your head."
"I do feel,
Detritus blinked. There was a tinkle of falling ice. Odd things were happening in his skull. Thoughts that normally ambulated sluggishly around his brain were suddenly springing into vibrant, coruscating life. And there seemed to be more and more of them.
"My goodness," he said to no one in particular.
This was a sufficiently un-troll-like comment that even Cuddy, whose extremities were already going numb, stared at him.
"I do believe," said Detritus, "that I am genuinely cogitating. How very interesting."
"What do you mean?"
More ice cascaded off Detritus as he rubbed his head.
"Of course," he said, holding up a giant finger. "Superconductivity."
"What?"
"You see, brain of impure silicon. Problem of heat dissipation. Daytime temperature too hot, processing speed slows down, weather gets hotter, brain stops completely, trolls turn to stone until nightfall. I.e. colder temperature, however lower temperature enough, brain operates faster and..."
"I think I'm going to freeze to death soon," said Cuddy.
Detritus looked around.
"There are small glazed apertures up there," he said.
"Too hot to re-in-in-staunch holders,"
mumbled Cuddy, slumping down further.
"Ah, but my plan involves throwing something through them to attract help," said Detritus.
"What plan?"
"I have, in fact, eventuated 23, but this one has a 97% chance of success," said Detritus, beaming.
"Hadn't got anything to throw," said Cuddy.
"I have," said Detritus, scooping him up. "Do not worry. I can compute your trajectory with astonishing precision. And then all you will need to do is fetch Captain Vimes or Carrot or someone."
Cuddy's feeble protests described an arc through the freezing air and vanished along with the window glass. Detritus sat down again. Life was so simple when you really thought about it. And he really was thinking. He was 76% sure he was going to get at least 7 degrees colder. Mr. Cut-Me-Own-Throat Dibbler, purveyor, merchant venturer and all-round salesman, had thought long and hard about going into ethnic foodstuffs, but it was a natural career procession. The old sausage-in-a-bun trade had been falling off lately, while there were all these trolls and dwarfs around with money in their pockets, or wherever it was trolls kept their money, and money in the possession of other people had always seemed to throat to be against the proper natural order of things. Dwarfs were easy to cater for. Rat on a stick was simple enough, although it meant a general improvement in Dibbler's normal catering standards. On the other hand, trolls were basically, when you got right down to it, no offence meant, speak as you find, basically they were, walking rocks. He'd sought advice about troll food from Chrysopraise, who was also a troll, although you'd hardly know it anymore. He'd been around humans so long he wore a suit now, and, as he said, had learned all kinds of civilised things, like extortion, money-lending at 300% interest per month, and stuff like that. Chrysopraise might have been born in a cave above the snow line on some mountain somewhere, but 5 minutes in Ankh-Morpork, and he'd fitted right in. Dibbler liked to think of Chrysopraise as a friend. You'd hate to think of him as an enemy. Throat had chosen today to give his new approach a try. He pushed his hot food barrow through the streets broad and narrow, crying,
"Sausages! Hot sausages in a bun! Meat pies! Get them while they're hot!"
This was by way of a warm-up. The chances of a human eating anything off Dibbler's barrow, unless it was stamped flat and pushed under the door after 2 weeks on a starvation diet, was by now remote. He looked around conspiratorially. There were always trolls working in the docks, and took the cover off a fresh tray. Now then, what was it? Oh, yes.
"Dolomitic conglomerates. Get core dolomitic conglomerates here. Manganese nodules. Manganese nodules. Get them while they're nodule-shaped."
He hesitated a bit and then rallied.
"Pumice. Pumice. 2 for $1. Roast limestones."
A few trolls wandered up to stare at him.
"You, sir, you look hungry," said Dibbler, grinning widely at the smallest troll. "Why not try our shale on a bun? Mmm! Taste that alluvial deposit, know what I mean?"
C.M.O.T. Dibbler had a number of bad points, but species prejudice was not one of them. He liked anyone who had money, regardless of the colour and shape of the hand that was proffering it. For Dibbler believed in a world where a sapient creature could walk tall, breathe free, pursue life, liberty and happiness, and step out towards the bright new dawn, if they could be persuaded to gobble something off Dibbler's hot food tray at the same time. This was all to the good. The troll inspected the tray suspiciously and lifted up a bun.
Yuck,
he said.
It's all got ammonites in it. Yuck. Pardon, said Dibbler. This shale, said the troll, is stale. Lovely and fresh, just like mother used to hew.
Yeah, and there's bloody quartz all through this granite, said another troll, towering over Dibbler. Clogs the arteries, quartz.
He slammed the rock back on the tray. The trolls ambled off, occasionally turning around to give Dibbler a suspicious look.
Stale? Stale? How can it be stale? It's rock,
shouted Dibbler after them. He shrugged. Oh, well. The hallmark of a good businessman was knowing when to cut your losses. He closed the lid of the tray and opened another one.
Whole food! Whole food! Rat! Rat on a stick! Rat in a bun! Get them while they're dead! Get caught!
There was a crash of glass above him, and Lance Constable Cuddy landed headfirst in the tray.
There's no need to rush. Plenty for everyone, said Dibbler. Pull me out, said Cuddy, in a muffled voice, or pass me the ketchup.
Dibbler hauled on the dwarf's boots. There was ice on them.
Just come down the mountain, have you? Where's the man with the key to this warehouse? If you liked our rat, then why not try our fine selection of...
Cuddy's axe appeared almost magically in his hand.
I'll cut your knees off, he said.
Gay heart sock of the Butcher's Guild is what you want.
Right.
Now please take the axe away.
Cuddy's boots skidded on the cobbles as he hurried off. Dibbler peered at the broken remains of the cart. His lips moved as he calculated.
Here, he shouted. You owe me for 3 rats.